I really like the order of these presentations because I think we're building on each other very nicely, although perhaps a little bit backwards, because while Jeanette was talking about IRB approval, I'm going to be talking about NIH grant funding. So these are definitely nicely thematically linked. I'm Nicole Kwan. I'm an assistant professor of public affairs at Indiana University, and I do not have any personal financial relationships with commercial interests that are relevant to this presentation. My research focuses on the intersection between science and politics and health and medical policy. And in particular, I'm interested in understanding how many of our federal health agencies, like the NIH and the FDA, make their decisions. They make an enormous amount of policy decisions, sometimes based on the input of scientific experts and sometimes under the influence of a fair amount of political pressure. So a lot of my research tries to unpack that. In particular, I'm really interested in women's health advocacy, which is why this is such a fun group to present my work to. And for this group, I don't probably need to go into the kinds of things women's health advocates are interested in. But, I mean, certainly one would be interested in increasing access to medical care, whether that's specific procedures or help for financing for access to medical care. Clearly, we're interested in reducing health disparities and addressing sort of historical gender inequities, as well as improving medical knowledge, which could include things like making sure women have access to information so they can make better choices, improving certain investments in research questions that historically have not been addressed, having more women participate in clinical research, a lot of different areas in this particular category. And for what it's worth, I mean, the women's health movement is often linked with a particular set of diseases. I often ask my students in my classes, what do you think the women's health movement is about? And typically they say breast cancer, reproductive health, which is great. I mean, these are important issues and issues of enormous public health importance. But of course, there are a lot of other diseases on the women's health agenda as well that perhaps don't get perhaps the same kind of press attention and public attention as some of these other things. So I'm interested in understanding when the NIH is interested in addressing women's health issues, do they focus in on the diseases that sort of get a little bit more attention, or do they also focus their resources on other diseases that are important to women? So the National Institutes of Health, of course, is one of our major funding agencies for biomedical research. They develop priorities for research with input from a number of parties, including experts from the scientific community, elected officials, health advocates, and in some cases, even the public. They solicit and fund grant proposals, so they might often identify some priority areas and let researchers submit proposals, and then they'll be evaluated by a peer group, typically composed of other researchers and occasionally some sort of public advocate or health advocate or consumer advocate. And then, you know, this institute actually had a really interesting budget increase from 1998 to 2003. So in this era of increasing resources, did women's health continue to get sort of their fair share of the pie is something I'm interested in exploring. So there has been a lot of conceptual work on the NIH and how we would distribute resources, particularly related to issues of, say, distributive justice and what would be fair. But there is a small body of research that looks at using sort of more quantitative methods at funding patterns. So, for example, Kerry Gross and his colleagues found in a 1998 paper, or I guess it was 99, that NIH funding is sort of weakly related to some measures of disease burden and then completely not related to other measures of disease burden. And they found in particular that, say, HIV/AIDS, for example, has, in their characterization, a relatively small public health impact but got an enormous amount of funding in this era, which, again, probably is a politically important disease, clearly the result, perhaps, of some important advocacy work and so on. Gitterman looked at this period of the NIH budget doubling and found that, at least for pediatric research, they did see a substantial increase in their budget. But as sort of a slice of the pie, pediatric research actually had less money by the end of this period than before, vis-a-vis the rest of the NIH budget. And so there is certainly increasing resources, but not evenly distributed across a variety of disease categories. And then some of my own previous research has found that grants for diseases on the women's health agenda and studies with female participants, increases in those are actually associated with a number of measures of political interest, including women's health advocacy, congressional attention, media measures, leadership, and so on. So the three things that I'm trying to tackle in this paper are to identify, one, trends in NIH support for women's health research from 1972 through about 2007. And then secondly and thirdly, to evaluate the impact of both these political pressure ideas as well as underlying public health needs. And of course, the National Institutes of Health, as a sort of a health and medical agency, has a public health mission to improve the health of the population. The dependent variables that I'm using in my models are basically the number of grants identified from CRIFS, which is an online database of funded grants. I found these using keyword searches of the titles and abstracts. So I would look for, say, breast cancer, and then I would get X number of grants in 1992, and then a different number for 1993, and so on. And to sort of focus in the analysis, I selected 15 diseases that really only affect women. So these are diseases that people would probably very commonly associate with the women's health movement. And then also looked at 15 other diseases that are, I'm calling, important to women. So leading causes of death, important causes of morbidity, but not necessarily exclusively affecting women. And since I'm looking at the number of research grants, I mean, unfortunately, with this database, they don't give you the dollar amount of the grant. And clearly, we would rather know exactly how much money is being spent. So one way to sort of get at this idea of are they big grants or small grants is I've run the models using all research grants that popped up on these keyword searches, as well as focusing in on only those R01 grants, which, for those of you who are familiar with NIH, are some of the big budget, big projects. So that's at least one way of trying to unpack, are these small projects that are funded or these more prominent projects that are funded. This is just, again, I apologize for the size of the text, but 30 diseases on one slide is a lot to put on one slide. But in any case, these are the ones that I picked, and I'd be really interested in hearing your feedback on whether there seems to be anything that's really missing. This is work in progress, so I have lots of opportunities to tweak it. But for now, I picked sort of the primary cancers that affect women based on sort of body parts, as well as a lot of issues related to reproductive health, and then a few others. Now, just to sort of be clear, I included breast cancer and eating disorders as an only disease, although, of course, they do also affect men as well. But when we think about the public policy debate, a lot of times these diseases are considered to be a gendered issue or a women's issue, so I just put that here for now. And then in terms of important diseases, I've got the leading causes of death, I've got a lot of chronic illnesses, and then some others. So this is where I'm starting with this analysis. In terms of the independent variables, I have three major categories. So one category are these measures of sort of public interest or political attention, including the number of advocacy groups that focus in on specific diseases. Two measures of congressional attention, which are the number of hearings in a given year that was on a specific disease, as well as the number of bills proposed in Congress on a specific disease. And then two measures of media attention. So I looked at the number of Washington Post articles for a year for that disease, as well as the number of network television news reports. It's just, again, these are measures of sort of public interest or political interest. The second category of independent variables was related to leadership. And I think we think a lot about the ability of women who are in particular positions to be able to influence sort of from the inside, so to speak. And so I have a measure of female leadership in sort of these senior NIH positions, whether that's the NIH director, or the assistant director, or perhaps the institute level directors who have an enormous amount of, I think, influence, as well as thinking about the role of allies in Congress. So I have the percent of female membership on some key congressional committees that have oversight responsibilities for the National Institutes of Health. And then the last set of measures relate to public health need. And for now, I'm starting with sort of prevalence or incidence rates per 10,000 women, death rates per 10,000 women for these specific diseases, as well as medical journal articles that are archived on Medline. All right. If you want to talk more specifically about the methods, I'd be happy to do this more after the session. But for now, just I've got 35 years, 15 diseases, 525 observations per model. I have the number of grants. It's count data. So, you know, the appropriate method is fixed effects negative binomial models. So I'll put that out there. But in addition, I also have an offset. I'm not sure how many of you run a lot of statistical models. I also have this measure of offsets, which basically helps me control for the fact that the NIH budget was growing and they do different numbers of grants each year. So it's important to keep that in mind. And when you think about the ability of any of these forces to influence the NIH, there's got to be a bit of a lag. I mean, they can only respond so quickly. So, for example, CDC data, which is my primary resource for particularly like death rates and things like that, their data is usually like 2 or 3 years behind, and you can't expect the agency to use 2007 data when they don't have it yet. So I lagged those public health measures by 3 years, and I lagged congressional attention and media by 1 year. There's budget cycles for the NIH and so on. All right, so just some general trends in NIH grants. This yellow bar on top shows all grants funded across all the institutes by the NIH. And you can see, particularly in the sort of 98 to 2003, we've got a pretty dramatic jump. So that's consistent with the fact that we know that NIH, of course, got their budget doubled. So it's great that they were funding more grants. I think the part that's more of interest to this group is this orange bar on the bottom, which is all grants that included the word either women or female somewhere in their title or abstract. And you can see that we also saw a blip in that time period. But in general, the gap between the yellow line and the orange line is considerably larger now than it was in 1972, which suggests that our slice of the pie is perhaps not as large as we might want it to be. To look at some more specific diseases, I just pulled out a few to show you. So we see that there was, again, a huge increase in sort of breast cancer or human or hormone replacement therapy, for example, tapering off a little bit over time. But generally, these are diseases that get a fair amount of NIH resources. Contrast that with, say, cervical cancer or abortion, where, again, we're seeing some small blips in that doubling period, but, again, much lower levels of funding, at least in terms of the number of grants allocated that had these words in them. And then in terms of just some examples of these quote-unquote important diseases, again, you can see cancer, as you would expect, huge numbers in terms of the number of grants funded, much lower numbers for some other conditions, say like depression, osteoporosis, HIV/AIDS. And again, we see this blip in that key time period, but in general, there's a lot of variation in the number of grants that are funded across a variety of conditions. All right, just to give you a sense of the model results, here I just sort of focus in on the positive and negative relationships. So painful to see those slides with all the numbers, and I want to sort of get to the big picture. So basically I ran four models, each two models with these only diseases categories, and then two models with these important diseases. And I focused in again on all grants, and then also ran a separate model for those R01 large grants only. And I think one of the key take-home messages is, first of all, we see both positive and negative signs in all three major sections of my independent variables. So these public and political advocacy measures seem to matter, leadership seems to matter, and public health disease burden measures matter. So across the board, any one of these mechanisms is potentially important and seems to be associated with increases in grant funding. I think the other take-home message from this is if you look sort of across the row, we see very consistent results, whether we're talking about these only diseases versus these important diseases. When things are positive, they're positive. When they're negative, they're negative. So from a research perspective, it suggests that these mechanisms of influencing the NIH work similarly for a variety of different potential things that we might care about. Again, something like advocacy for breast cancer might actually have similar success in terms of external influence as advocacy for heart disease, for example, and so on. And just to give you some more specific ideas about the magnitude of these effects, I'm focusing on this table only on those grants for those only diseases, so the breast cancer and the endometriosis and the cervical cancer and so on. And basically, we see some similar patterns. So for example, having an additional advocacy group for a particular disease was associated with an almost 3% increase in the number of grants focusing on that particular disease. And so it suggests, again, that advocacy is a pretty important mechanism, at least in the number of groups. And we see a sort of similar pattern, although a little bit higher in terms of the overall magnitude of the effect for these sort of important diseases. Other areas that were similar were if we look at these prevalence rates. So an additional jump from sort of 1 per 10,000 women to 2 per 10,000 women was associated with a 0.01% increase in the number of grants and 0.02 for these other types of grants. So again, similar patterns. A few places where we see differences, the magnitude of the effect seems to be stronger for having women in these senior leadership positions for these important diseases versus only diseases. And then conversely, death rates seem to be more important or have a stronger effect for these only diseases versus the important diseases. Again, I wouldn't put too much on this actual percent because that's kind of a function of the fact that I use per 10,000 as the denominator, and I suspect if I did per million, it would be, you know, just a different decimal point. But there's no doubt that it seems to matter. There's definitely a relationship between, thank you, prevalence rate and death rates, advocacy, leadership, and everything. So just to sort of summarize, I think it's clear that NIH grants are related to many of these measures. And in particular, I think these death rates per 10,000, the number of disease advocacy groups, the number of women leaders at the NIH seem to matter from sort of a number crunching, statistical modeling sort of way. And what's also really interesting to me is that we saw similar results for diseases that only affect women and diseases that were important to women. And I was actually very surprised by this finding, because we often think that the women's health movement really embraces a particular set of issues and those get the most public attention. But these results suggest that the women's health advocacy that perhaps doesn't get as much media coverage is still rather effective at influencing NIH decisions to prioritize certain conditions. I do have a few study limitations that I should acknowledge, including the fact that my dependent measures are based on keyword searches. So to the extent that I have some noise in here, a grant that had the word breast cancer, it actually had nothing to do with breast cancer. I mean, we're doing our best. Hopefully that noise goes in both directions. But I think we're getting at something in terms of the number of grants that are being offered or being funded in these categories. I also don't have information on grant budget, and clearly that would have been so much better. But we only have information up through 84, and I think if you stop at 84, you're missing the really neat stuff that happened in the 90s and now. So for now, we're just going with the number of grants. And I also don't have information on the unfunded proposals. So there could have been some really great research projects that just did not get a score that was high enough to be funded in a particular year, or a research project that would have been of an enormous amount of interest to a member of Congress or to an advocate that for whatever reason was not funded due to that peer review process. So again, I can't say anything about what the pool of applications was. I can only say something about what was actually funded. And then finally, right now, I have these really crude measures of advocacy. I just have the number of groups. Of course, it would be so much better to know how many times did they call their member of Congress, how many times did they go to a meeting at the NIH. Do those peer review committees, those study sections, have an advocate who is interested in these issues sitting at the table and having a voice? And across a variety of diseases and across a variety of years, that's just really hard to measure. So we're just going with the number of groups. But it does seem like there's a time trend, more groups popping up, and clearly more, I think, interest and activity in the women's health arena. So I think I'm still seeing something about this. So in conclusion, I think it's clear that NIH grant priorities appear to be related to a lot of measures of a lot of things. And to those who are interested in making sure that NIH priority setting is sort of a public process, it's a taxpayer-funded agency, you know, I think it's promising for those who have that point of view to see that there are things that matter beyond just some of these more scientific, investigator-driven ideas about what's important and what's right. And I think another thing that it suggests is that utilizing some key congressional and advocacy resources to keep your particular condition at the forefront of people's minds is a really important way of keeping perhaps the NIH's attention on your condition. So for example, we saw some pretty strong effects for Washington Post articles. So again, keeping your particular condition in the news, maintaining that sort of sense of urgency and importance could be really important for continuing to send those signals to the NIH. So this is something that we need to continue to fund. And I think in terms of my next steps, I have to rethink my list, so that's, I'll be looking forward to your comments on that. But secondly, I think, you know, to use other measures of disease burden. I mean, there's been other research that used DALYs and QALYs and hospitalizations and these sorts of things. And I think, you know, to the extent that this information is available to those at the NIH who are making these decisions and to advocates who are setting their agenda and to members of Congress who are trying to decide what issues to take on, these are also important measures of disease burden. And I think it would be important to include those kinds of measures as well as the prevalence and incidence stuff that I have so far. Thank you.